When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the ASAP Weekly Rocket League podcast, a show hosted by Lazero, the man of a thousand rants, and Wabbit, the fan favorite. This show details the latest news in the Rocket League scene, esports results, and tips and tricks on how to get better at the game, while sometimes they'll just take a random topic and see where it takes them. Thank you all for listening, and enjoy.
Hello, welcome back to the ASAP Weekly Rocket League podcast. I'm your host, Lazero, and I'm joined today by Pascal. How's it going, Pascal?
It's going good.
Yeah, how do you feel about that high-energy intro after we've just been talking casually in the pre-show for 10 minutes?
I love that.
Big switch, you know? This is the official show now, right? We need to a little bit of the extra energy. No, it's good. So, Pascal, I think you reached out through the Discord, just very briefly kind of saying, hey, I'd love to be on the show. And I was like, yes, let's do that. And then I proceeded not to answer you for a couple of weeks, mostly because, well, I'm switching jobs. Let me put it that way. But regardless, I was like, hey, this is a good time. Let's do it. My intention was not to do like guest. Like after we've switched the format of the show, my intention was not to do guest, regular show. But now it's kind of becoming that. It is not a pattern I created. I want people to know, but it is something I will continue if people keep being like, hey, I want to be on the show and it works out. So I'm very glad that you're here because not only will we get a chance to talk about you and Ground Zero Gaming and coaching that team, but also I think Rocket League probably dropped the most important, I would say, solo queue, like one person queue update in like 7 years. I don't know, maybe that's too much. I don't know if I'm overdoing it, but it feels like a big deal with the boost meter type thing, so I'm sure we'll get a chance to actually dive in on that. Anyway, with all this being said, Pascal, I would like you to introduce us to introduce yourself to the listeners, kind of your Rocket League experience, how you got into coaching, that kind of stuff, if that's
so all right. Yeah, hi, I'm Pascal, 20. When I wake up, I coach, and after that, I go to uni. I'm actually a linguistic student, so I study English and German linguistics. And yeah, why did I say when I wake up? Well, that's because of time zone issues.
Sure.
I'm in Europe, and the team I coach, Ground Zero Gaming, is in Australia. That means early wake ups.
Does that actually mean it's easier sometimes?
Like,
feel like if you're a university student, like, wouldn't it be worse if it was like during the time that you should be at university, or am I just university students?
Look, I wouldn't wake up for uni if I wouldn't coach.
Wait, you're telling me this is actually helping your
studies?
This
is helping me. I love coaching in Australia. Mm-hmm. The downside is sometimes when it's like 4 a.m., when there's like very early stuff, but it's not too bad because usually I wake up at like 7. So that's a normal human being time of waking up. And well, I'm kind of forced to now. And before that, well, I just would sleep to like 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. All nighters every second day, gaming with friends. So yeah, it's actually helping me and my life, getting my life together. That's a purpose to wake up because, well, I'm commuting to uni. It's not like I live like 10 minutes from it. I need an hour still. So like, I just wouldn't go to uni if I wouldn't wake up like 3 hours earlier to coach. So,
but you're up, so you're like, I might as well.
Is that yeah, might as well. And the good thing is I already did something productive. So, well, I just...
You're in the mindset.
I'm in the mindset of just going, right? So it's helping me a lot. My schedule is kind of weird sometimes in uni because, well, normal students are in from like 8 a.m. to like, I don't know, 4 p.m. I'm in from like 1 p.m. to like 8 p.m. Okay. Which makes some courses weird and, well, just, it's just different. It's just a different experience, but I like it. It keeps me, yeah, keeps me just living, waking up early for Australia.
I love that. All right, let's get into maybe the Rocket League focus a little bit. How did you get the, you know, interest in the game? How did you start playing the game? I kind of want to get that side of it.
I started on PS4, so it was free then. So I just got it. And played it with mates sometime. Got my PC, like season 4 or something, season 3. Then nobody wanted to play with me. I just kind of played it alongside. And I met new friends, which I grinded with. And yeah, kind of, I never was big into football. I'm not a car guy. I just found it very fun to play Rocket League.
I feel like Rocket League is one of those games that both, like people who are not into cars and not into football would still wanna play. I don't know about you, right? Like, yeah. I don't think it's a barrier of entry, nor is it like I'm into cars, I'm gonna like this game. I don't think it works kind of that way. I think it's its own thing.
Yeah, 100%. So. I agree. I mean, I've always been playing games competitively when I got the chance. I used to play Mario Kart Wii, like, and try hard the online lobbies, got to like the highest rank or like highest MMR, like every week, and just grinded that shit when I was 8 years old, 9.
So I want to know. Yeah, I want to know if what the popularity of the Mario Kart Wii to Rocket League, you know, competitive player / coach. I want to know, how is this a just you story, or is this like a more common thing? And there's a whole niche market I don't know anything about.
I've not met one player. I haven't asked. It's not like that's coming up in a conversation. Well, right, like I haven't asked if they played Mario Kart Wii competitively like I did, but I think that's just a me thing.
If there's ever a casual tournament, you know, like one of those like Home Story Cup style tournaments, I need a Wii, a Mario Kart Wii, or even Mario Kart Switch, whatever it is, right? I need a like an on stream coaches play each other. Okay, that's what I need from you.
Oh, I'm winning.
No, that's amazing. So you got into that, and then you got into Rocket League. Did you, when you were kind of getting better at the game, were you also already watching all the, like the Twitch and the RLCS and stuff like that? Or was it after?
I think kind of my motivation of becoming better was by watching RLCS. I wanted to be a pro, like dreaming. I was like, what, 12, 13, something like that. I don't even know how old I was, but I was
that's a good
young
time. That, you know what? Honestly, for Rocket League, that's a good time to start dreaming of pro.
Yeah, and I wanted to be on the mainstream and play competitively so bad. I never did really, but I just wanted to become a very good player, and then I started watching Twitch streams from better players to become better, and yeah, that's just kind of how it went. So I watched a lot of RCS back then, more than I do now, which is kind of pathetic, to be honest, because it got my job. It's like my job now. But, well,
you find like you just have so much to analyze, I'm sure, for your team itself, right? Like, I don't think you probably, there's some teams that you watch in the RLCS and you probably like you watch the game and you're like, this is not going to help my team at all. Is that fair to say?
Well, I'm a believer. I think every team, that's not like diamonds, but from every team I can learn. I think from everyone I can learn. So it's never, I will never learn anything because I always try and find something. But yeah, that's it.
That's fair. I think kind of in this vein, speaking of learning some stuff, I did want to ask you a little bit about the most recent major. And maybe just some trends. I don't know if there's like any trends that you saw or anything that you saw by a particular team that you found super interesting that maybe a casual viewer might not have noticed watching the last major that happened a couple weeks ago.
I did. Okay. It's two major things.
Okay.
The one thing. The one thing is basic Rocket League wins. looking at Gentlemates. Okay. So, just solid rock. Nothing crazy. Well, that's one team. It's one team that won that hadn't had the best results before. But still, they won. So kudos to them. Very good. Just solid Rocket League. Nothing crazy. And then there's the other thing, which I think is the current meta switch of Rocket League, the changing meta. And it's playing twos and threes. And that's a bold statement. I can explain.
Go for it.
the one mode that everyone plays is twos. So kind of the repercussions of playing that mode so much is becoming intuitive in that mode and kind of giving threes a bit of a twos flair. And there's a lot of teams, especially Karmine Corp, by the way, that are trying to master that. They are playing twos and threes. And it kind of shifts the positioning. It shifts the how to commit four balls, like challenge behavior. It changes a lot. Modern Rocket League is more twos than it ever was before. And that's like the main thing that I found from the major. And then there was Gentlemates, who just played threes normally, solid rock, no overcommits, and they won. So I think that's the reason why Karmine Corp kind of struggled, because it's a very inconsistent playstyle to do that. But the
especially because you're especially when you're trying to fit, I guess, the way, because a lot of the pros are just playing twos, fit the way they kind of instinctively play in those into a threes rotation, right? That's probably the big struggle. But I'm very curious that you put it that way, because there was some time where we were like talking about how we just know, like, you see from all the pros, they're playing a whole bunch of twos games. And the justification was that higher level Rocket League, like pro Rocket League, was in some ways more similar to twos play, right, in general. And that's why you should play it. But I think from what the conversation we just had, like what I'm hearing, is that it's almost went full circle. And now it's because of the fact people have been playing so many twos that Pro Rocket League looks like that. And actually, if the pros played more threes, then it wouldn't look necessarily as much. It would look more like Gentlemates, yeah, I guess.
100%.
And it
kind of shows why Sixmans and stuff is dead as well. Like, nobody's playing threes. It's just twos. Just twos. Yeah. That's it. People are playing twos and threes. And
so is your recommendation that people should be playing more threes, essentially, if they want to have more success?
No. 100% not. I think the meta is changing. The meta's switching up. Everything is just changing, especially in Rocket League, where you have like very dominant eras and then teams just do something against it. And, you know, like, it's always just changing and you kind of need to keep it up. I think perfecting that is the key. The thing is, playing twos and threes tends to more overcommits. And the second teams figure out how to not overcommit while doing that, this will always beat a 3v3 standard team. But we can look at the example of Gentlemates and Karmine Corp. Gentlemates just played solid rock, no overcommits, just playing for each other, forcing for each other, stuff like that. And then KC kind of like this new play style. And well, on LAN, when you have like the jitters, when you have a crowd, all that, you will play worse. And when you can't kind of trust your gut instinct, I'm playing freeze, this is how it should went, this is the pattern that we kind of need to recognize in that scenario, this is the foundation, then you will kind of fall apart. Because every single player on KC is better than every single player on Gentlemates individually, 100%. But when a team just doesn't function because of jitters and it's on LAN and they're trying a new style, it falls apart.
So Do you find then, sorry, just bouncing off here,
when these teams learn how to do that effectively and not overcommit as much, they will succeed more than these solid teams, the solid phrase rock teams.
And what's like for the casual player, what's maybe the reason that in twos you would overcommit more, right? Do you know why?
There's two players, not three. And when you fuck up, there's nobody to back you off, or just one. So,
but like, I'm just trying to think for like, for maybe the average player, they might think, well, you're playing in two, so why don't you play safer, right? Like, that's, you know what I mean? That's yeah, but their
brain. There's also more field, kind of, mm-hmm. because less players. And that tends to people just zooming around and aping around, just boosting, which mm-hmm. makes it not safe because, well, you just dive. And kind of that is twos on a higher level. You don't give space because there's so much space.
Oh, okay. And then in threes, that would be really risky because you have a third player, right? So
yeah.
Like there's sometimes no reason to do a super risky challenge, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of a hybrid that Casey is striving for, right? Because obviously there's three players. It's not two players. So that kind of like when somebody extends their play because their play just happened, they will extend for a bit longer to leave that 2v2 opportunity open. And then the third man positioning kind of changed because usually you are in a triangle, right? That's what we all learn, be in a triangle and freeze. And that kind of shifted to, okay, one player does whatever and then the other two play twos. That's kind of...
I like that. explain the current Rocket League meta. One player does whatever they want and the other two are playing twos.
But yeah, but that's dynamically, right? It's not like, oh, Vatiras doing whatever he wants every single
obviously,
time. It's like
obviously.
In the play, right? So they're still rotating. They're still playing with each other. It's just... not so strict as it was before with like, okay, I'm first, second, third man.
And that makes sense because like, I think if you restrict it too much, it's just not, it doesn't react enough, right? To what's happening in the game almost.
Yeah. 100%.
Like you'd be like, oh, I need to be this position. It's like, well, yeah, but there's someone else closer to the ball currently and then stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I've gained a lot of insight already. So I'm excited. Yeah, what would then your recommendation, like people are watching this, is Gentle Mates then gonna have a super tough time adjusting, or do you think as long as they stay consistent they'll still get some pretty good results?
They are very good players, mm-hmm. and the good thing is with that kind of play style, your ceiling isn't that high but your floor isn't that low. So,
and I would argue that like in a tournament, once you want, like, I think the higher your floor, especially when you're playing bad, like, isn't that the better thing, the more yep. consistent thing?
100%. And that's why Gentle Mates will stay on top for as long as they want to, kind of as long as they are. that's what happened with BDS, like in that dominant open era. That floor was just so high. Whenever they played bad, well, they just 50'd. Basically, what BDS did back then was introduce the 50 game to Rocket League. They just 50'd properly. They 50'd for each other. They had no loose balls. And, well, they just dominated for, I don't know, like 1 year longer. And, well, just high floor. Not so high ceiling.
And maybe that's where you get these... I think some of like the greatest moments in Rocket League is when the high ceiling team then shows its stuff. You know what I mean? Yeah. But those teams sometimes won't have the same consistency just because of the fact that of the style they play.
Yeah, and it has been like that in every other esport as well. I mean, if we look at Valorant, every flashy team will fall apart eventually just because people will just out basic them and play around that. And that's what will happen with Rocket League as well. Like, people would just figure out how to play against that kind of play style, that kind of team, that kind of overcommittee things. And we will always see meta shifts.
And I like how it's kind of, from what I really like about your explanation is because it lets someone who's like maybe a casual viewer get their brain into the concept, right? And I feel like it'll just be a constant struggle between these two ideas, right? Of maybe the solid as a rock versus the more flashy create stuff styles and seeing how it goes. Maybe one last thing, maybe about tournaments specifically, I'd like to ask you is, do you find that there's any way for a team to like really shift their play style in a tournament? Like once you're already in like a game five and you're down, you know, however many you are, right? That's what, like, I feel like a lot of times when you see a momentum shift in a finals, it has a lot more to do with literally momentum, like the same way volleyball would have, right? Where you get the timeout and there's almost a momentum shift sometimes. But I don't know if like I've ever seen a team fully switch what they're actually doing. They just play what they're doing better when they're already in the tournament.
Yeah, you can't in Rocket League. You can't you can't have like that set play changing stuff. You can obviously say, okay, yo, you go for demo more. You do this. Do this kickoff. But you can't say, okay, we will play A site like this, like in Valorant or CSGO. You can't really anti-strat mid-tournament. And it's more like just, okay, mentor is down, okay. Hi, Bob. What the fuck? Like, hi, Bob, get back into it. Play how we always play, because essentially what you want to do is make your playstyle the more dominant one in the game right now. And you don't want to react too much. You want to be active as much as possible. So it's mostly a kind of mental switch when a momentum switch happens, because then the team just says, okay, we've practiced this enough. Let's just play. We scrimped them enough. Okay, let's win. We know what to do.
No, I think that's great. I would say because you just see that happen sometimes, right? Where just one team's got your number, and no matter what you do, you can't really switch it or force the game to be what you want it to be. And I guess the general idea behind all this is that this is our team's strength. Let's make sure what's happening in the every game is our team's strength, and that'll make them a little more uncertain because they're playing a style they don't want to play, right?
Yeah.
100%. So I like that. Okay, perfect. I think we're going to continue on here. I'm sure we'll have other topics pop up, but kind of speaking of coaching in general, there was a question I wanted to ask, and this is specific to Rocket League in the sense that I think Rocket League coaching is very different from a lot of other esports. You mentioned Valorant. I'm sure it's different in League and all those other games. But what's probably like the main misconception or the main like thing that people don't know about when it comes to Rocket League coaching specifically?
Coaches being cheerleaders. We are not. The trend kind of evolved because of, well, the history of coaching in Rocket League, where, well, pros retire, they join friends that are still pros, and they just hype them up. They're just cheerleaders.
That's not really a real coach.
Yeah, modern coaches aren't cheerleaders, but a lot of players tend to think that. And the second you like kind of work with a coach that's very hands-on, you will kind of change. There's a lot of, well, misconception about there's the big misconception of people thinking we are just cheerleaders, but that's not the case. Every coach I've spoken to is just so hands-on, so like driven into that game and wanting to change everything and just win. They can't just be cheerleader, they're actual coaches.
And I find like one thing right away that I'm noticing from what you're saying is that a coach will be able to direct a player a lot better than the player can direct themselves. Yeah. Especially because certain players are lazy. But maybe not just lazy, but maybe the term is like they have certain habits, right? There are certain things that they're very good at training, maybe, or looking at, right, the way they see the game. But there are some other flaws, like something like a blind side to them that they can't see, right? You really need an outside perspective. And your teammate's not going to be the person that should be mentioning that to you, right? There should be this party outside of the team itself that can be in, step in and say, hey, this is one thing we actually really need to look at. Because we don't want to create tension within the team itself. So I already am seeing that from what you're answering.
Yeah, I like to say we need to recognize the pattern of the game right now. And that's not just to a team, but that's also to players. I want them to recognize the pattern. And when they recognize the pattern, they have like 28,000 options to react to that. And I'm not the person to judge the reaction to that. I want them to react themselves. I want them to envision something. And that's kind of the the hands-on approach. I will give them, I will lead them until the decision is made, and then they can talk about it. It's all about recognizing patterns, and it's all about adapting and creating patterns and then reacting to them again. And Rocket League is a very fluid game, but it also has its patterns, and these you need to recognize. And that's mainly coaching. You will be coached how to recognize the pattern. Or I coach, so like I want my players to recognize a certain pattern and then react to it.
No, that's perfect. I'm loving this. I feel I'm getting a lot of knowledge bombs today, so this is good. And I feel like especially our listeners will enjoy this kind of stuff. The kind of speaking to that, right? You've been coaching Ground Zero Gaming, and I want to talk, you know, maybe it's identifying these patterns or just generally what's maybe like a, I don't need you to divulge all the secrets, right? But maybe like what's like a general thing that you have, like you're waking up at 4 a.m. okay, and you're going into a scrim, or maybe you just have some ideas you want to talk about with the team. I kind of like, I don't want to do a day in the life, but I something like that, like give me some idea of maybe what your coaching sessions look like, if that's fair to ask.
Well, it starts with paint. We will kind of have a fun little laugh. We will just draw something game related, obviously, and it will
MS Paint.
Yeah, in MS Paint. Amazing. It will always look horrendous, but that's the fun part. That's
I love kind this. Of
to break okay. the ice, right? Yeah, it's just funny. It's just funny. Whatever they come up with, like for example, if I'm like in a team and they see, okay, that's kind of whatever. That's a problem. Our problem is defending corners, for example. Then, okay, fine, draw it. Then, like, we go into paint and actually figure out stuff and draw stuff. And then after that, we kind of talk and just have fun. And then we go in-game and actually seek the problem, find solutions, talk to each other. A very, very hands-on approach. And then, obviously, I'm a very concept-driven coach. So there's a lot of concepts I just use for example, a defensive corner. And well, I'll sprinkle them with the concepts that they need, and they figure out a solution. It's kind of a learning process every single time. And obviously, when the team kind of grows and they know the concepts, they know the solutions, they don't need me to sprinkle the concepts. They just kind of figured out the sense that they know, oh, okay, this concept happens here. Okay, we can react to that. Maybe there's a comm missing that we kind of need to adjust there. So it's very individual in a team setting. But yeah, I love the paint thing. That just breaks the ice and everybody laughs and it's fun.
And do you find like the, yeah, I think comms is probably one of part of Rocket League that feels so daunting in some ways, just because a lot of information has to be communicated in a relatively in a shorter amount of time than you have time for, I guess is the way to put it, right? And being as efficient and as clear with those instructions, and I imagine like creating your own specific comms right to the team that you're on is probably a vital part of the process, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Like this is the concept we're currently not doing really well, and we need to do it better, and we need to communicate how we're going to do it better within 3 seconds of in-game time, right?
Yeah, I can actually leak something. Okay, like
I don't know if they want you to.
So how I like to see comms is, so we kind of have the foundation. It's about efficiency, precision, and urgency. So, well, your tone needs to change depending on how urgent something is. And it needs to be precise, right? You can't be saying, okay, I'm top right when you're top left. It needs to be precise. And then it needs to be efficient. You can't just be waffling and yapping a whole dialogue. You actually need to say, okay, I'm back right, 100, whatever. So these are like that's the foundation. And I talk about the big three. And the big three are position, boost amount, and expectation. So what I always want my players to do is say, okay, back right, 100, 50 for me, 50 right. Oh, let me know, like when there's somebody on ball and there needs to be like one more touch so you can read it. That's like a let me know. Right? And that's like that's comms. That's basically comms. And then you record your sessions. You go into them with your players and you see, okay, you said this there. You should be saying this there. And then you learn. So you are talking about efficiency, precision, and urgency. And then in a real comm, you say your position, then your boost amount, and then your expectation to the play. And this can be on ball, off ball, whatever.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome. I like to say, Pascal, that we've had a lot of, I think we've had a fair bit of coaches, right, on the show. And we've talked a lot about like the psychology, right, of individual players and player management specifically. I feel like you've given me probably some of the most like realistic, practical, like, if I had a, like, you know, if I was doing my university team or something, and we wanted to try some of this stuff out, they could, you know? And I love that because it makes comms feel like a little less imaginary. I don't know if that makes sense. People are like, oh, I'm good at comms, but like, what does that actually mean? And I love the way you described it. Three things. Perfect. Yeah.
Sweet. Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't have much more to add. That's great. If any of our listeners are in our Discord and you want to just throw something out in the esports discussion or the general chat, please do, because I'm kind of curious on what people's takes on this insight is. I think with that, we'll continue on. I don't think we have to add much more to that. That was more than I hoped for. I want to talk a little bit about the new change, right? Speaking of kind of knowing how much boost someone has, right? There's a new visual change that's going to be probably most impactful for the people who don't usually play with comps, right? And the people who just play kind of their rank threes or rank twos. And that's boost change, right? We have the little circle and it shows you how full or how little someone's boost has. It's interesting that it was a circle, I'm not going to lie. I don't know about the design. I don't know if you have any opinions on the design or the style of it. I think that could probably change in the near future, but let's start with that, and then we'll actually get into the important part of it.
Well, I like the design. It's just simple. The boost thing in the bottom right is a circle, so it kind of makes sense to be a circle in the name tag, I feel like.
Yeah, but in the circle, does it go straight up? I guess it doesn't fill the same way on your actual screen. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, maybe, whatever. I think it's a great change.
It literally doesn't matter. Yeah. What it looks like. Yeah, it's a great change. You see people's boosts. You think it's great. Tell me how this is going to change the way the average person plays Rocket League.
Well, the average person that solo queues will love it, because you just know, okay, my mate has no boost. That probably shouldn't be up for a pass, or I can take the ball away from him or whatever. But me being a coach for a pro team, I see a very, very big benefit in like a pro setting.
In a pro setting? Okay, go for it.
Look, little thought experiment. Imagine you're on the ball, like you're on the ceiling, and your mate tells you, okay, someone's up. But you can't see that player because he's hiding behind the ball. He's hiding in front of you, kind of. The info that someone is up is not, well, it's good. You know, okay, I probably shouldn't play a shot or something. But you can't like feel it because you can't see him. And looking at the boost thing, if your mech says, I'm 50, you're hearing it. You don't know what it means. Like, there's more senses that you need to activate to actually, and this is seeing, by the way, not just hearing, but seeing that you can read the play more efficiently. Meaning, if you can actually see that player in the air, if we go into the example before, you will have a better understanding of how to beat him, right? And then for the same thing, if you see the boost amount of your teammate, you have a better idea to judge the play, the next play that's happening. And you can kind of predict what will happen just with that tiny bit more info. Yes, it will not change the game like so hard that, oh my God, if we revert that change, we can't play the game anymore. But it's a little nice niche thing to add to give you more info, and not only to like many people say, lower the skill ceiling, but actually elevate it, because now you have a, you can actually envision what your mate is doing with a boost amount, which is a good info. So I love the change. I love the change in a professional meta, just because I always like, okay, you are hearing stuff, but you also kind of need to see it sometimes. Best example, that guy on the ceiling. He just preached onto you. Like, you can't see him. Well, if you can't see him, a call is effective. Okay, it's more effective than no comm. But if you can see him, it's way better, right? And we can all agree on that, I think. So that's kind of the similar idea. I love it. I just love it. It's a great addition to professional play, I feel like.
I think it'll be a great addition to professional play, because you'll see, I think any having more teams be synergized will make for better games, right? I think that's ultimately, you know, we already have probably one of the highest skill ceilings we've had in this game ever, right? When it comes to just the level that every individual player is at compared to even like 2 years ago, we'll say. But then adding this extra bonus of the ability to communicate this information, or just it's already communicated. It's up to the player now to be able to read it, I think is wonderful. And I would add, yeah, for the average player, it might make ranked games more enjoyable, just because you'll be able to quote unquote play better by being a little more, you know, thoughtful of, and, you know, keeping track of these things, like looking at that boost. And then I feel like the most fun that I've had in this like recent update is now my brain going, okay, I'm reading this, and now I have to like practice interpreting it, you know, like what does this mean for the game? And I think that's like a new avenue to kind of explore when it comes to playing the game, and I love it for that.
Yeah, lovely, love that. It's also good for the viewer, I feel like on stream, or like when I spectate scrims, like I see boost amounts now, so I'm not like I have to have an extra program open, like CARL or something. It just, I see boost amounts now. I can interpret place better and stuff like that. So it really helps. And I feel like the viewer will appreciate it as well, if you can actually see the boost on the nameplate and not only in the top right where nobody looks at, because, well, it's just not intuitive to look into the top right, top left of a screen to see boost amount.
So, I feel like it's more esports-y too. Like, I don't know if that's a word, but like esports in general tends to have a stupid amount of information all over the screen that when nothing, we'll say quote unquote, I mean, Rocket League is pretty good about stuff happening all the time, but you can interpret a situation better just because you have a little more information, right? So you have a fuller understanding as someone who's watching of kind of the state of the game. And for instance, like even if you can't verbalize it, but someone could be watching it and be like, okay, this team consistently does not have any boost, right? And so like, let's see how they do with, what's it called? How are they going to get out of this situation where they're constantly no boost on defense right now? And you can actually visually see it, right? I think that's great.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. I think that kind of, that's our general covering of that topic there. Just generally, yeah, why does this not happen earlier? That's
oh, I have no clue.
I will say it's not something that I personally thought of, right? So I actually think it's probably one of the most creative changes that they've made to the game that doesn't feel like a lot but has impacted the game, so I do appreciate that.
Yeah, I love it. It's actually, it's so good. I mean, we have talked about it for a bit now, but yeah. I would not have thought of this as well, but I love it, and I like it, so please keep it, Psyonix.
You go. with that in mind, I also kind of maybe want to ask you about your own personal kind of time playing these days, right? Do you find when you're coaching you have as much time to play, or do you mostly just focus on the coaching part? What's your kind of average week, we'll say, of getting time to play the game?
Well, I started to take uni more seriously this year, so there's not much time playing. But last year, I have been playing a lot, and I've been competing as well for some like domestic leagues in Germany and shit. So I always like playing, even though I'm a coach, and it's like feeling decisions. Always better than just, well, coaching them, because you can sense kind of the timings and whatever. And yeah, that's why I always try to keep playing. I've now gotten into the problem of me not having time anymore and coming home at 8 p.m. then having to do like homework or some assignments, some uni stuff, or like coaching sessions that people buy, right? Like, it's very rare for me to play the game. So it was better, well, not better, but it was different a year ago where I didn't go to uni as much. Then I just fully grind it.
I would say that practicing coaching is making you a better coach, right? You don't necessarily need to be practicing the game as much as you did before if you're focusing on the coaching part of it. I would say, but yeah, that's just me. But that kind of makes sense. Okay, how about this? Since we are kind of like a podcast that likes to kind of throw in a little bit of tips and things for people to get better, kind of with your now coaching experience, right? As someone who's We're gonna say the average player, you're gonna have to bring your brain back. I know you've been watching a lot of pro play. I need you to bring it in a little bit. What would you recommend for the forever diamond that's trying to get into champ? What's the recommendation from Coach Pascal here?
Don't flip around when driving.
Don't flip around?
Yeah. Look, if you approach a play, don't flip. I see so many low-level players just flipping around. And that's not just diamonds. That's everyone. That's up onto like SSL where people just flip randomly. Don't. Have good positioning and drive. Because a flip costs you 3 seconds, right? Mm-hmm. Like flipping around costs you 3 seconds. 3 seconds where you can't react to a play. And if something different happens, you can't react. You always want to react. Flipping is obviously fine if you like rotate back and...
You're just trying to get back,
and get some momentum, whatever. But don't flip around just for the sake of flipping around. Just drive.
that's actually, oh my goodness, Pascal. What other gems are you gonna unearth? If we had another show, we'd like pull out rock, like we'd find out what the eggs are. You know, like I feel like that's where we get.
One more thing, if you are close to a wall. Don't flip into that wall. You will not recover. That is a corner. That is a normal wall. Just drive challenge. Just drive challenge or single jump, recover on wall. Practice how to wave dash on the wall if you want to have something similar to flip next to a wall. Why would you want to flip into a wall? You can't recover.
I just feel like all our listeners are being called out, and I love it. I don't do any of those things, you know.
maybe one like more tactical thing.
Yeah.
When you think about defending the backboard, please be front post. This gives you a better angle. Don't go onto the backboard when you're back post, because your impact is higher when going inside net. But when you're front post, you can go backboard.
Okay, because that's I think a common thing, like C2, C3, that's common, because they rotate the back post and then they go up, right? Because they're told, okay, I need to defend backboard, right? That's the thing they learn at that rank ish, right? And then they start, but they do it in the rotation, right? In the threes rotation, and they just go up from the back. So it's kind of having that middle person be at the front end, and I think that's better too, because then you have that third person in a much better position.
Yep.
If you've stopped the double tap, right?
And it's just like before, we kind of talked about the recognizing the pattern. You need to recognize that you're the front post player and you need to cover high or go for the ball, like either. But don't just rotate back post again. Do something. And when you're front post and you need to do something, it's either, well, you go for the ball or you don't and you go backboard. And then the guy in net goes for the ball because of the better angle. That's like kind of the idea of it. You need to recognize that pattern. Just so please, front post, backboard. Thank you.
Amazing. Just amazing. Okay. I think we'll leave it at there, Pascal. I feel like... Are anyone who listens to this podcast got more than considering the amount of time and the things we've covered, I feel like we've covered way more than I usually would get covered in this amount of time. So I very much appreciate all your knowledge about the esports scene, about your current kind of training, coaching, and about those tips at the end. We usually like to give some tips at the end of the show. So right away, coming off this segment here, I'm going to say, yeah, try to do those things in your ranked games. That's your homework, quote unquote, till the next episode. But I want to give Pascal here a chance. Do you have any shout outs you want to make at the end of the show? Anyone to thank? This is your time to do so.
I want to shout out my team. I actually love them. So for a bit of background, so join your white circle. I've been coaching Laxon, that guy on my team. I've been coaching him for the last 2 years, and I've did everything with him. And I love that guy. So shout out to him. I wouldn't be here without him. Also, shout out to Prompt and the other guy that's not announced yet. So yeah, Prompt. Crazy kid in OCE, 15. And he is just the next thing. He is him. So shout out to them. And then also thank you to Ground Zero. First time on a pro contract, making this my job now. It's been insane. I love what approach they kind of took with kind of more developing a team rather than having a succeeding team. And I like the idea of developing a young player in Prompt. So shout out to them. Thanks for the opportunity. And also shout out to you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for being a great host. And also thank you to the listeners. Thank you for listening to me yapping around. I appreciate it.
No, I think they took out their notepads, or maybe they have paint open, you know, they're drawing what they have to fix, whatever it may be. I'm sure they enjoyed this episode as much as I did. So yeah, perfect. Thank you for being on the show once again. Amazing. If you ever, and not right away, okay? We don't want to ruin your special, you know, specialness, all right? but if ever in the future you want to be on, we would love to have you. Oh, maybe 100%. On with Labs, maybe. I think that might be a nice, getting all three on or something. That might be a nice combo there.
100%. I would love to.
Perfect. So with that, I think we'll end the show here. Thank you everyone once again for listening. I say definitely in the Discord, you know, maybe you can even at Pascal. I think you're, if not at me, and I'll ask Pascal to you know.
Yeah, man, you can ask me.
There it is. Perfect. And otherwise, spread the word, you know, let people know about the show, and we'll see you/hear from you next time.
Thank you. Bye.
Peace. Bye.